Enter if you dare this ghastly conversation of teens fraught with despair and recent lacerations. Final girl, chase after her, don't let her get away. But first, the Slumber Podcast Massacre.
Welcome to Slumber Podcast Massacre with TNA. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, that's Tim.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba, that's Andy.
And this is a podcast about horror. Every week, Tim and I get together. We talk about a different movie from the horror genre, from your well-known classic down to that rare gem that ain't got time to bleed at the back of your video store shelf. This week, it's a very special episode. It's a birthday request from one of our favorite patrons and favorite superfans, Dr. Brian. It's his birthday show, and it's his big request from 1987. It's Predator. Before the question, Tim, fun fact about Dr. Brian and the movie Predator. Never seen it.
Are you kidding me?
No. I just learned this.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He was just in town, and I was like, hey, I saw him last night. And I was like, we're recording your Predator birthday episode tomorrow. And he was like, oh, cool. Maybe I'll watch it. I haven't seen it.
I was like, what? That's going to be like the biggest payoff. It would be like
if I could watch this movie for the first time right now.
Yeah.
I would give $1 million.
And just to be like, and to not know, but give it as a suggestion. Like if you had never like had an orgasm before, but you said to your buddy, like, I know you're going through tough times, try blowing your wad. And then then you try it and you're like, fuck yes. I was so right. No, he's going to love it.
Yeah. So, Predator from 1987. Tim, do you have any experience hunting?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. By
nature,
normal definition,
not like in a bar, CD bar.
By normal definition, no. It's not for lack of wanting to. Like as we've talked about before, I grew up with an absolute arsenal. My dad is a Marine, so he taught me how to shoot. And so in my backyard, we had BB guns and throwing stars and throwing knives and blow guns and bow and arrow and everything you could think of.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of certain practice that way. Now, if you're a kid, and some people are just going to have to forgive me on this, but if you're a kid and you have weaponry, at some point or other, you're going to want to try it out a little bit.
Yeah.
God love doves and how dumb they are.
Oh, no.
And they're sweet. I love doves. They are beautiful creatures. But you can target practice at them with like not a lot of skill.
Uh-huh.
And they'll just wait there till you hit them. Like they'll just sit there like dumbasses until you just boom, plug them. I used a slingshot. I remember one time, and this is a little bit of brag-worthy skill. I was hunting a squirrel with a slingshot.
Uh-huh.
And that thing started taking off like squirrels often do. And I pulled that slingshot all the way back as far as that band would go and let that thing fly and just rocked that fucker. Now, it didn't kill it. All it did was kind of like, rah, like kick it out to the side. And then it immediately like resumed its course.
Right.
But it felt good.
Yeah.
There was one time, too, where... I guess this qualifies as hunting. A friend of mine, a friend of the show, Dr. Renault, and I had, I believe the guns were 16 gauges.
Oh.
And not overly powerful. And we went out
is
in
the
his,
larger, or what makes a powerful gauge?
You know, for somebody to have handled and shot a gun, you would think that they should know that. I don't really know.
Yeah.
I know that 12 gauges get it done.
Okay.
But this is a 16 gauge. Because, yeah, like a 22 is just going to itch a little bit.
Right.
You know.
A 45 is powerful.
But that's millimeters.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah,
Yeah.
Right. For all the hunters
like
that listen to our
show.
It's
a really bad week to start going through the nuances of firearms.
For us to be talking about such like an absolutely like testosterone infested movie.
Yeah.
And we're like, gauges, millimeters. It's been 16-
we're going to talk about sweat muscles, Tim.
Yes. And sweaty muscles. But yes, a 16 gauge, not a very powerful gun, but it's definitely a gun. It'll kill you. And so we were out in some woods that he had behind his house, and we were just aiming at, you know, we were shooting birds. Now I'll just go ahead and admit it. And so I was kind of in one area, he was in another, and we were very cautious. We were so cautious about guns that we were even like letting the gun cool off before we'd reload it, like, because there's a little smoke, you know.
Sure.
And so we'd make sure that it like it cooled off a little bit. We just leave it open on a log for 5 minutes and then reload it. We didn't thought it was going to explode in our hands.
Yeah. Better safe than sorry when you're dealing with something like this.
We're still here, so yeah. I mean it was for the best. So I was in deeper into the woods. He was really more in his backyard, and all of a sudden I hear, I got one, I got one. And I went running over and he had shot a blackbird, and the blackbird had fallen down on a pile of like 2x6s that were like 12 or 14 feet long that were just stacked up for a project. And so the bird was laying there, and the back end of it was blown off completely. And I remember like, in an honest, and it wasn't just because I wanted a piece of the action. Uh-huh. The bird was still alive, right? By just like its base neurology was still functioning. And so I just did the like, put the barrel to the head, you know, like God. I'm going to put it out of its misery. That thing just went, boom, like shot right down every bit of the length of that, that 2x6. And then of course exploded. But yeah, so... So that's hunting, I guess.
Sure. You weren't like, you didn't get a license for it.
Yeah. It's probably more killing than hunting, but.
Technically, the verbiage would be hunting. You did hunt it down.
Yeah. And we didn't like, we even went out one time in the same
woods.
You
were very young and didn't know any better, though, at the time, right?
Right, exactly.
Right.
We also went out in the woods in the dark one time. We taped, flashlights to the guns.
Oh, nice.
And we were hunting possum.
Oh, my God.
And the funny thing is that we found one, all right, and it was like we're looking around, you know, we've got the light on the ground, we're ready to shoot it or whatever. It's literally taped to the barrel of the rifle, and all of a sudden, bam, there's a possum, like 6 feet from us, and it just goes... like screams at us, and we scream and run back into the house, like drop the guns and run into the house, terrified of this thing. And I'm glad we didn't kill it because possums are actually pretty awesome animals.
Yeah. Waiting for just the way it was taped. You did shoot, and then it just shot the flashlight because it had like been sticking up over the barrel or something a little bit.
Right.
I thought that's where that was going.
No,
we, running away and not doing any damage, even better.
Yeah, but you know, we were really into this. This is the thing with these movies is that at some point when you're a young, I shouldn't qualify it by gender, but when you're a young man and you watch all of these movies, at some point or other, you have to kind of put yourself to the test.
Yeah.
And we even had a night where we set out, we were going to grill on a coffee can, and we had, we lined it with tin foil. And we had hot dogs, and we had a raft. There was actually a body of water that we had to go across to get to the other section of woods.
Uh-huh.
And the only problem is that I was in the water up to, like, just above my knees. And, like, when we were getting out of the thing. And then I felt something on my leg, and I reached up. To this day, I can picture it. I reached into my leg and I grabbed something and pulled it out and looked at it and threw it. Was some sort of creature. And it kind of looked like sort of like a hairless spider. So it had like three legs coming out from each side, but it was sort of a pale beige color.
Okay.
But it was like enough to where I could like pinch its body like a piece of Hubba Bubba. Like, with legs.
Okay.
And threw the fucker. And it's like, why don't we go back to the living room? Because I'm not, it literally was like an alien. So we tried, you know, we enjoyed the idea of the outdoors. We were inspired by the sort of the testosterone, the manliness, the ruggedness of these movies that we were watching. But yeah, other than that, as far as actual hunting, I know quite a few hunters. But you know what the thing is, though, is that for anybody that has hunted will tell you that it's a lot of just waiting.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting and waiting. And I think you really just have to be somebody who loves the outdoors. Like there was a kid that started at our office.
Loves waiting.
Or loves waiting. Yeah. In any regard. But there was a kid that, like, some people are just born into this, like a young guy that we hired from Wisconsin, and they do a lot of hunting up there. And we have a decent set of woods back behind our property. And I remember he was there for like 2 or 3 days, and he didn't have any friends. He moved there from Wisconsin. I don't know how he even got the job, but he literally knew no one. And he was like, do you mind after work if can I just go like out in the woods? And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, we own that. Like that's part of our owner's property. He's like, I'm like, you can't hunt out there. And he's like, no, I just want to be out there. And I was like, yeah, of course you can. Like this was a kid that was just like pining for that experience,
yeah.
You know, that's where he felt peaceful. So that's the thing about hunters is that I think depending on who they are. Now, I'm not talking about these assholes that go to Africa just to kill a lion or something like that. But I think that a lot of hunters out there, you know, like they say, you know, one arrow or one shot per animal, they harvest it, they clean it, they eat it. A farmer that's growing soybeans is killing motherfucking everything in that field that you can possibly imagine.
Right.
Hundreds, if not thousands of animals to grow your soybeans. So I don't have anything against it as long as it's not just for, you know, like a pissing contest. You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You eat it. I'm fine with
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So I'd like to, should we just go? Should we just go without somebody that knows what they're doing?
Like just you and me.
Like, fuck it.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I don't really want to go.
Have you shot a real gun before?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay.
Dude,
you kind of like, I want to be careful about
this. Go ahead.
This.
What were you going to say?
Guns as a mechanism are interesting.
Well, yeah, sure.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of ingenuity went into that. There's a lot of precision.
Sure.
A lot of cool engineering that goes into it. No, yeah, I've shot a gun not several times in my life, only a few. I know I did it once during, like, we had, like, a government day in school where you got to run for a city position.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and I was fucking mayor for a day. I trounced my opponent just by flooding with the campaign posters. But we got to go down into the shooting range in the police station and shoot guns there. That was pretty cool. I have shot a gun. Okay, that was one time. This might have been the only other time that I've shot an actual, like, firearm that wasn't, like, a BB gun or something.
Okay.
We were on a cruise. This was been my senior year of high school, and you could do, like, clay pigeon shooting off the back of the boat. Like, you just waited in line, and you got 5 attempts.
Yeah.
And I hit 4 out of 5 of them.
That's actually fantastic.
Yeah, I was like,
that's not easy.
I just chalked that up to video. That was just one of those where I'm like, I play video games, thank you very much, and walked away.
Dude, that is not easy because there's the whole
I was so pissed I didn't hit the 5th one. I mean, you don't. Man.
My God.
It has eaten away at me forever.
Well, I am going to take you to a place. We are going to go, if we're going to take an honest-to-God field trip, we're going to go to a place in Wisconsin. I can't remember the name of it, but it's set up. I might have even talked about it on the show. It's set up like a golf course. So there are 18, quote unquote, holes.
Yeah.
But what those 18 holes, and it's all through the woods. So it's not like you're just out in like some big open field.
Yeah.
Like you're actually walking through the woods and stopping at these different locations. You have 12 gauges.
Yeah.
And Some of them are what you describe, like traditional clay pigeons going across the air, the open air, like across above a cornfield or something.
Yeah.
Then there, you might go deeper into the woods and there might be like two that roll out on the ground. Oh. Like, so it's kind of mimicking different animals that you might hunt. And you spend a whole day out there just shooting at, you're like in a live course of these things.
I don't really like holding guns.
Well, yeah, you got to hold it.
Yeah.
And your shoulder's going to be fucked.
That sounds fun for people who just, you know, love loud noises and that raw feeling of power. More to you.
But it's like a video. It's like living in a video game, though.
Sure, yeah. I can do that in a video game, though.
But I'll tell you what, though. What you described is not easy because you have to do what's called leading. So it's like you're not aiming at what you see. You're aiming at where it's going to be.
Right, yeah.
And that's not easy at all. So 4 out of 5 is fucking awesome, dude.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my – not a big hunter. I've gone fishing a few times.
Which I guess is its own form of hunting,
isn't it? Yeah, it's hunting for sure. But yeah, I've always caught and released. I've never eaten any. I don't like fish.
Yeah,
that's wouldn't want to eat it.
Big problem with fishing.
Like, there's a part of me that I'm like, man, I would love to do like a long camping trip like that. But then I'm like, what do I? You know, I don't want to do one where I have to catch my food or shoot my food.
No,
but I also don't want to prep for 7 days worth of food.
Yeah. Okay. Fair. That's why you go camping with somebody that knows camping, that knows how to do cooking over a fire, has all the equipment.
Yeah.
And usually those people like doing it, so more power to them.
True. Probably a very, very, very short list of people I want to spend 5 nights in the woods with.
That's true. But you know what? You don't need 5. You just go somewhere for like, well, see, that's the problem. We don't have like... Okay, so up in Wisconsin, everybody just has like a little bit of property.
Right.
Maybe you don't own it. Maybe it's that, you know, somebody that you know and they let you camp there, whatever. But everybody's got a spot. So it's not a big deal to say like, okay, let's pack up the stuff. We already own all the equipment because we live in Wisconsin and that's what we do. And let's go there for the weekend.
Yeah.
And let's drive, you know, 30 minutes and we'll be there at our campsite and we'll set up and no alarm clocks. We'll build a bonfire. We got, you know, we'll turn on some music. We got booze and... chewing tobacco is really great around a campfire.
Ugh.
You ever dip before?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. It's kind of just
never again.
Maybe around a campfire. But no, it is. Camping is really great.
What does it specifically do? I know there's a quote about chewing tobacco in this movie.
Oh, that, it'll make you a goddamn sexual tyrannosaurus.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, which they make.
Which I've never heard chewing tobacco does for you.
Right. Yeah, like as you're like in stage 4 lip cancer, right, and it's like, yeah.
Like maybe your teeth are gnarly like a Tyrannosaurus.
Right, yes. Yeah, you've had your arms amputated. But no, but there are some, just so you know, in case you're looking for any gift ideas, there is a wide variety of sexual Tyrannosaurus t-shirts out there that are awesome as fuck, and I will buy some.
Oh. The only, probably only t-shirt made from a line from this movie.
Yeah, right, exactly, yeah.
No, Tim, there are a ton of quotable moments in this movie.
Absolutely, yeah, and a ton of quotable moments that you could use in, like, the worst-case scenario. Like if like let's say you're an EMT and you're about to do like CPR on somebody and you can look down at them and say like, you know, the CIA's got you pushing too many pencils, like just in their weakest state, you know.
Yeah.
But there's a few of them out there. But let me ask you this real quick. Your history with this movie.
Yeah.
Did you see this all those years ago? Like, not in the theater. But.
No, I don't think I saw it in the theater. Did I? No. There's no way I could have got my parents to take me to this.
I didn't see it in the theater.
Yeah. But it is definitely a movie I've seen 1,000 times.
Yeah.
I had not seen it in a while, for sure. But yeah, there was definitely a point, you know, through end of middle school, high school. Yeah, probably owned this on a tape.
Yeah.
Probably had it worn down.
And that's, yeah, and you're right. It is, it's got a lot of those. I mean, there are other action movies that are way more, and especially Schwarzenegger movies, that are way more heavy loaded with one-liners. But this one, it appeals to a high school kid where it's like every other one-liner sounds like the greatest thing.
My first memory of this movie is in middle school, a kid had like an article from a magazine about the movie in his locker, like just like one page of it, really for the pictures that were on the page. And I just remember seeing the alien and I was like, oh my God, that is unlike anything I've ever seen. I have to see that. And just, you know, and then you start hearing the very unique bits about this movie and you're just like, what?
Yeah.
This was back in the time where we weren't out of ideas.
Right. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. And I mean, it just even another idea, like if you know, funerals aren't the most comfortable things to go to. And sometimes you're just waiting in that line and, you know, you're looking at the pictures that they put out and it's very nice and sweet. But eventually there comes that moment where you have to approach the casket.
Yeah.
And maybe if you don't know quite what to do, you just go with the "you son of a bitch." Like, just as you're walking up to it, everybody's like, yeah,
they were good friends.
Right. No, it is. It's a fun movie. It's I know that towards the end of our episodes, it we just begin to like gush on like praise and whatnot. But as far as a multifaceted film, this has just about everything you want.
Yeah.
Certainly more, even a little bit of some nice, sincere drama or like scenes of some poignancy.
Yes.
You know, as well as the action and a very, very awesomely clear moment with a shot of a full moon where the horror, where the score becomes completely straight on horror.
Right.
And so, I mean, we have ourselves a horror movie. So yeah, it was a huge favorite of ours. I'm going to go ahead and say that we were a little bit more into Commando, which now looking back, I think Predator is probably a more well-rounded film.
Yeah.
It's hard to say anything bad about Commando, but
no. But also, I mean, you got to think, especially when you're young, like the 2 years in between when Commando comes out and this comes out, like at that age, you were probably 12.
Yeah, right around there. Yeah.
2 years is forever.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, as you know, before we started this, just looking at Schwarzenegger's filmography, I'm like, oh, man, like, you know, to us, it felt like he was just always a part of growing up, right? And growing up takes forever. But in retrospect, you look back and you go, oh, 10 years. And then kind of everything outside of this 10-year span, not really worth noting.
But if that 10 years includes you being a 12-year-old.
Yeah, then, yeah, but everything. That feels like a 25-year, yeah, absolutely. Where you're just like, life is this, like this guy, that is what life offers, is Arnold Schwarzenegger in the best movie you've ever seen that year.
And isn't it amazing? Like, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk more about it as we get into it. But like you think about moving not to a different city, not to a different state. You move to a different country and your greatest hope is going to be like, I hope I know how to use the language well enough to figure out where to buy toilet paper.
Right.
Normally, you don't set a goal for yourself to say, I don't know the language. I'm going to move there and I'm going to become one of, or at one time, certainly the biggest star that country has ever known.
Yeah.
I mean, that is such a ridiculously huge feat to accomplish.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And that won't be probably my biggest achievement.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Jeez, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I got so bored with being the greatest movie star ever. I just became the governor of the fifth largest economy in the world.
He can do anything.
He can.
Yeah, and he's got big muscles, too.
Let's talk about it. Let's get into some muscles here. So this is Predator from 1987 for Dr. Brian. Oh, yeah, also Mystery Solved. He did send the Jim Bristles accounting nameplates. He sent us some great gifts over the years. He sent us a nice little urinal for Tim to use.
Yeah.
I nixed that shit right away.
I'm yes.
like, he's not pissing in the studio. My God. Funny joke, though.
It's the thought that counts.
It is the thought that counts. So happy birthday. Belated. It was a couple months ago, but, you know.
And, yeah, and again,
we've got things scheduled, God damn it.
And the the Jim Bristol's nameplates is just white fire hot genius. I mean, it is like gorgeous.
It was great.
Amazing gift.
We did run into another friend, Jordan, another patron, who did remember the Jim Bristol's bit and was ecstatic about it. So I'm glad besides me, like other people remembered it. I felt terrible not remembering the bit, but right. I'm glad it affected everyone else. So
I wasn't even sure that when I was telling it that it made enough coherent sense. But for somebody to be like Dr. Brian was like, I rewound that like four times. It was hilarious. I'm like, thank God. That's what I was hoping for.
No, it was a very Tim joke in a story. Like,
oh yeah,
maybe that's why I just was like, oh, there's another one. All right.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I've heard so many of them.
Yes, you
have. All right. Anyway, so this is Predator from 1987. It was written by Jim and John Thomas, directed by John McTiernan. It stars Arnold Schwarzenegger, Carl Weathers, and not Jean-Claude Van Damme. Oh, you know what? I forgot to write the budget. Probably a budget was decent, and it made $1 billion.
15 to 18 mil made 98.3
there
million.
There we go. Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
Let's do Nansum, and we'll get into some spoilers of a movie that you should have seen, especially if you requested it for your birthday. Major Alan Dutch Schaefer and his team have just arrived in an unspecified South American country. The team has been tasked with rescuing a foreign cabinet member from insurgents, forced to be joined by Al Dillon, a CIA operative and former veteran with Dutch. Soon into their mission, they find a wrecked helicopter and three dead Green Berets, all who have been skinned. After finding the camp they were looking for, a firefight ensues, resulting in the decimation of the camp, leading to the reveal that the mission wasn't for an extraction at all, but for the halting of an incoming invasion, a job that had been given to the found Green Berets weeks before. Finding a lone surviving rebel, the team learns of incoming reinforcements, so they decide to escape through the jungle to the extraction site. Little does the team know, but they're being hunted by the same entity that killed the Green Berets. A monster from another planet equipped with an arsenal of technological advancements who's hunting them down one by one. Now Dutch must try and get his team back to the chopper for extraction before anyone else becomes the prey of the Predator.
Ooh, nice little tie-in there.
My bifocals on my glasses are useless, by the way.
So you just
useless.
You just have them for the sexy factor.
Right, yeah.
Right. Yeah, Green Berets. Now, when you see them, when they make their appearance in the movie, it's a little bit more like Raspberry Beret, right? Right?
Red fillets. Yes.
So there is that. This movie, I mean, I'm going to try not to sound like an absolute psychopath in this episode. I've just got so much here.
Yeah.
Like,
do you remember the first time you saw it?
I don't remember the first time specifically, but I do remember the feeling of the first time. Like, I remember, and that feeling has continued through the years. I think you experienced it too, where it's like, yeah, it's Predator. We know it's Predator.
Right.
And then you start watching it and you're like, holy fuck, this is engaging.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's, I'm not going to use the slow burn term, but it does, as you said earlier before the show, it does take its time.
Oh, it's a very patient movie.
And, you know, it's like, how ballsy is it to say, and this is the reason why we're going to talk a little bit later about the score of the movie. It is heavily scored, but it almost has to be. Short of a musical that is about music, you have to have score in this because it is, at least for the first like 20 minutes, 20, 25 minutes, people moving silently and slowly.
Right.
And if you wanted to get your buddy to come see a movie, you would not say like, dude, you are going to love how silent and slow this movie is. Like, you're just going to love it. No, I mean, they've got some score in there to build that tension. And it's just it's an overall production value that really superseded just about any action movie at that time. I'm going to go ahead and say that. I mean, as far as plot development, character development,
yeah,
quality of acting, along with all of, they don't go short on the action either. The explosions.
My God.
And really even more graphic.
On the action.
More graphic than a lot of action movies at the time.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You could take chunks of this movie, and if you put it in any movie today, people will go, this is obviously played for a laugh, like an over-the-top laugh.
Yeah.
But in this movie, it's like groundbreaking and sincere.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. And the thing was, it's like, the great part about that is that I think that you can watch those moments that you were just talking about now and see them for what they are.
Yeah.
You know, there might be a little uncomfortable slur here or there.
One. There's one. Only one. From Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, right.
Thank God we only, you know, kept him to one.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's, yeah, we were lucky for that. But yeah, so it's, but I don't think that it plays as like it's trying. One thing that overly trying, because the perfect example of this is the problem that I had when we covered, what was the water one with the like creature?
Deep Rising.
Yeah, Deep Rising, right? And they try to do, as so many movies have.
Dude, I was thinking about that. Yes. During, okay, good.
So they try to have these setup scenes where we get to know these different strong personalities.
Yeah.
And they're sort of like battling each other and cock swinging and all this stuff to kind of establish themselves. But in Deep Rising, it just, none of it rings true at all.
Right.
And it's actually more annoying than it is. It's supposed to be a little cool.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. But in this movie, it's a little cool. Like, yeah. It's kind of awesome.
Well, they are far more distinct in this movie, too. I mean, not even like, personality wise, look wise, like they all, everything is so unique. I mean, like Shane Black and the other kind of guy, like, are like, maybe similar, but other than that, everyone yeah. is, you couldn't get more unique looking guys.
Right.
Who all are
huge people.
Yeah. Yes. Huge people. Yeah.
Absolutely. Which is why you mentioned Jean-Claude earlier. Jean-Claude at just a stately 5'9". Nothing wrong with that height. 5'9 and a half is a little bit better. Yeah. But anyhow, I'm going to say I'm 5'10". But anyhow, so, you know, like human freak at the minuscule 5'9", as I look down at that. Yes, Jean-Claude was just a kid living out of his trunk, literally, when this movie was made. And he was cast, and the reason why they cast him is because they knew about his martial arts prowess. So they're like, we're going to have a guy in a suit. He's going to be jumping around the jungle. Let's get this martial arts kid that could do the splits like there's no tomorrow. And he's going to be really lithe and just agile in this suit.
Yeah.
Which I guess he could have been more than most, but when they watch the dailies, you've got a cast full of guys with an average height of like 6'3", 6'4".
Oh, yeah.
250
average,
pounds.
Yeah.
And of muscle, by the way. Yeah, it's easy to be 250 pounds. This is 250 pounds of muscle when you're 6'4". That's built. So it just looked a little silly. So they ended up getting the actor from Harry and the Hendersons.
Yeah, he had just 7'2". Finished Harry and the Hendersons.
7'2", a full foot taller than Schwarzenegger.
Wow.
Amazing.
It's got to be. I mean, it works so well. It needs to be a giant thing.
It does. And it you know, to Jean-Claude's credit, like I even saw Ventura talk about this, and he's like, yeah, did he complain a lot? Yes. He's like, but I felt for the kid. It was super hot. We were in the jungle. And with the suit that they had, and this was the same thing for the actor that ended up taking over the role, literally could not see. So when you're getting ready to do a scene, you walk through it with the head off.
Yeah.
And then you go back, put the head on, and just try to remember where everything was.
Yeah, you just
was.
Have to memorize the scene.
In the jungle. The real jungle of Mexico, right? So it's like not easy. But he got fired, and Joel Silver told him, like, you'll never work in this town again, no. Whatever Jean-Claude, whatever your name is. Goes on to sign a 3-picture deal with Dino De Laurentiis, and the rest is history.
Yeah, was it the next day?
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, Bloodsport has to be pretty soon after this.
Right. But it is an interesting origin story here. It started out as a joke after Rocky IV came out, and it was kind of like, okay, like, who's Rocky going to have to fight in the next movie? An alien?
Yeah.
And these two brothers, who had never written a script in their lives, were like, that's a really funny joke. We think it's so funny that we're going to write a serious movie about it.
It's for Russia?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So we had peaked. We're like, no one else.
Right. Yeah. There is no one.
And he's fought a wrestler and a Russian, and we're out.
Yeah. North Korea is always going to be quiet, aren't they? But anyhow, so they started you know, putting this script together. And but instead of, you know, a boxer, they decided to go with a soldier. Which maybe it should have been a Rambo joke in retrospect, but that's fine.
I mean, right.
I wasn't there. But anyhow, so they...
Because he's the most deadly, right? And then I read that.
Yeah.
Because like, most deadly a U.S. soldier.
Exactly. The idea was is that originally it was going to be... actually, this idea definitely spawned or influenced a Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode years later, but... What we the original idea was is that you'd have actually a group of different species of aliens that come together for like an annual or whatever every 20 years hunting thing.
Yeah.
But then they're like, yeah, that's going to be really fucking expensive. So how about one? Literally one alien.
There's only one Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Right. Exactly. There probably is. Literally. So they trimmed the script down. They got it written. They knew no one. They were nobodies. So they just literally, like not metaphorically, literally slipped it under the door of producer Michael Levy. And he looked at it and he liked it. And he gave it to Joel Silver, who had produced Commando. And he liked it. And he was the one that took this like no-name script, read it, had that experience with action. And he's like, I'm going to use all the resources that I have to elevate this to a big budget movie.
Yeah.
Like, I think this has something. So that's how the whole thing gets started. Then Schwarzenegger looks at the script. Obviously, they had worked together on Commando. And he liked it, but he wanted it to just be more than, like, him versus the alien. Kind of like if you picture the end of, like, First Blood.
Yeah.
Just Brian Dennehy and Sylvester Stallone. Like, he wanted more than that. So that's where he's like, why don't we add like a team of commandos?
Brilliant.
Absolutely. And he's like, that way we can turn it into like almost a horror movie along with it being action. Mm. So that was part of Schwarzenegger's genius. And that's how we get our start.
Yeah.
And he was, unfortunately, after having figured all that out, Schwarzenegger was tied up with a bunch of commitments. So they're like, okay, no problem. We'll just like take this time to cast this cast of commandos,
yeah,
which is a fucking awesome cast.
It's incredible.
Carl Weathers.
Yeah.
You know, if you see Carl Weathers in an interview, like they say, don't ever meet your idols.
Yeah.
He's just like a kind of a pussy. Like he's just like, I hate to say it, but he's just like you want him to be like Apollo, like, you know, full of life and full of energy and gusto and muscles and just confidence.
Yeah.
But he's like just a nice
dude.
So
he's like an actor.
He's like a nice, thoughtful guy that acts this way
right.
professionally. But no, I mean, he actually is. He's a real sweet guy without, I mean, he is the least like Apollo. Like you would. You know, you would think, and granted, there was a lot of competition between these guys on the set, but, and steroids, but.
Yeah, I read that they would work out and he would be like, he would work out in secret and be like, I'm just naturally like this.
Right. And he's beautifully built.
Man, I wonder if that's what I'm doing. Working out in
that's,
secret.
I mean, I have wondered that before. Huh. If you've got a goddamn set of dumbbells
That'd
somewhere.
Be weird, right? Yeah.
And like every night for like 3 hours, you're just like sweating away.
Or do I just kind of naturally have, you know, not a lot of volume to these, but there's definitely some.
They're solid.
Some mass in there.
They're solid.
Yeah.
He and.
Now you'll never know. I'm just fucked with your head so bad.
Yeah, and yeah, like, and you know what I was actually thinking about? I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'll just buy him some dumbbells for his birthday and see how far we can take this. Like, meanwhile, you go beep, boop, boop on the wall and it slides across and you've got like $1 million gym on the other side. But that would explain it. But yeah, Carl Weathers, beautifully built. And yes, they did. They were in a motel or hotel that had ballrooms that weren't being used. So Schwarzenegger used his own money to rent out the ballrooms, had a whole bunch of equipment flown down to set up these giant gyms for these guys. So they
already had that kind of money.
Yeah.
I mean, this is 3 years outside Terminator.
Well, he had a really successful bodybuilding career. I mean, lots of sponsorships. And I mean, he won like every title that you could win for like 12 years.
Yeah.
So he had some money. And so, yeah, they would wake up at like 3-4 o'clock in the morning, work. They'd run a couple miles, work out, have breakfast, and then hit the set. you know, and it was just amazing. So you've got Carl Weathers, you've got Jesse Ventura, who got the part like any person would, despite his wrestling career. He read for it.
Yeah.
He had an agent. He went and he read for it, and they're like, okay, we need this this character of Blaine. He's got to be 6'4", 250 pounds, and he chews tobacco.
And he's got to have a big old dimple chin.
Right.
Not going back on that. Dimple yeah. chins yeah. And are important.
An almost fuckable chin. So, yeah, and they're like, the funny thing is they saw him, and obviously, like, the body size is evident. But they're like, would you be willing in some scenes to chew tobacco? And literally pulls out a tin of Copenhagen and a bag of Red Man and says, I've already been doing it for 20 years. Literally already like avid tobacco chewer. So yeah, very much got the part there. And I saw a really cute interview with him on the set. And they were just talking about like what he wanted to do. And he's like, I don't want to just be a wrestler. He's like, Hulk Hogan is just going to be Hulk Hogan for the rest of his life. And he's never going to be anything more than a professional wrestler.
Yeah.
I want to be an actor. I want to do this. I want to try all these different things, like not throwing out governor of Minnesota right. just yet. But it was really cute. He's like,
I'd love to. My dream is to do a movie with Robert De Niro.
And I'm like, that's adorable.
Right. I hope you do, buddy.
Yeah. And all of us knowing Robert De Niro is such a tough guy. Meanwhile, he's like literally a foot and a half shorter.
Oh, God.
But then we've got Sonny Landham. My favorite.
Yeah.
Native, half Cherokee, 1/8 Seminole. And
was
he,
it Poltergeist?
He was in Poltergeist. Yeah. It was a construction worker.
Yeah.
He also did other jobs. He was in the Army. He was not overseas, but he was in the Army. And he worked some odd jobs, and then he got into the adult movie industry.
Nice.
Now, I have some of the titles here.
Oh, good. I was hoping you did.
Yeah. We've got, The Private Afternoons of Pamela Mann.
Ooh.
Big Abner.
Okay.
As opposed
yeah,
to...
Yeah, see, this is back... Well, when did he do these? 70s?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Big Abner.
Actual titles.
Slippery When Wet, and of course, The Trouble with Young Stuff. So... He was, I've checked out some of his porn, a good looking guy, really good looking guy, an amazing voice, like
yeah.
this amazing booming, slightly like Southern voice, really good looking dude. And so what was interesting about him is that they actually had to hire a bodyguard in order to cast him. The insurance company said, you need a bodyguard on set to protect everybody else in the movie from Sonny. Like, he was just that crazy and wild of a,
yeah,
of a guy.
Like,
you know,
to keep him from fighting other people?
I think he was just, like, he was just restless. Like, he, you know, he'd come from porn. He's a big dude, too. He's, I think.
Like, put it away, dude.
Right? Yeah, right. I mean, he's big in a few ways.
Yeah, everyone to set. Not yeah. with the pants.
Yeah. You don't get cast as Big Abner for nothing. But he's also like, I think he's 6'3", 6'4". Maybe. He's a large guy. Maybe not as heavily muscled as, you know, some of the other dudes, but definitely a big dude. But yeah, he was just like a wild child.
Yeah.
And had come from a wild background of this porn industry. And they're like, hey, this guy isn't really Hollywood material, but they really wanted him. And he's great. He's fantastic
oh,
in
yeah.
the role.
He's one of the most memorable parts of this
Nobody,
movie.
Not to play into like the stereotype of the stoic Indian. But
oh, do they do that in this movie?
That
is
man,
he magic in this movie?
That man can stare into the distance like no other.
Man.
And I love how they made sure that... Oh God.
Thank God he has some sort of ancient relic or something he can also rub that probably adds to his super perception powers.
Thank God.
Granted by his ancestors.
Thank God they made sure that his camouflage face paint was very much like accentuating his cheekbones, which are already in your face. Yeah, so they lean into that a little bit. But hey, it works.
It does work. And it's not even... I mean, it is tropey, but it's not,
but dude,
like, offensive.
I'm going to tell you that it's in it, it, at at a certain time, not all that long ago, not tropey. There is a, I've told you before about that documentary about Night of the Grizzlies, where there were those two separate grizzly attacks in Glacier Mountain and our Glacier National Park. And when the shit was hitting the fan, the priest that was there was like, I've got an Indian friend and I think we should probably get him over here. Like, we're dealing with a wild bear. And so they literally called him over there because of his tracking abilities, which he did naturally have, because of his idea was like, we need to get a giant iron. They had this, like, I guess it would be used for bonfires, but like an iron bowl, and we need to fill it with wood, and we need to tie like baling wire to, so that we can carry it, but have a big fire, because that's about our only defense against bears. Because as he put it, they're kind of shy around fire. That's actually how I put it. And so they literally were like, get the Indian over here because he knows what he's doing. And that was in the late 60s.
Yeah.
So, I mean, tropey, yes, but there's some truth to that. So I don't think that they do anything.
Well, I don't doubt that you can't learn tracking, but to just inherently, come on. Right. That's the tropey part. Well, I am compelled to stop in the middle because I sense something I cannot see, and there it is.
Well, that's true. You're right. It's not that it couldn't be skills that anybody could learn.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I've read stories about like young Native boys sneaking up on birds and catching them. Now try that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not easy to do. Or there was Joe Younghawks, who was captured in World War II over in Germany, and he was sort of standing like guard, and he was captured by five Nazis, and they were taking him back to torture him and back to their encampment, and he killed with his bare hand all five, and they were armed and he was not.
Yeah.
Now he got shot all over the place, but he lived.
Right.
But he literally killed five people with his bare hands.
Damn.
So yeah, there's a skill set there, but yes, they kind of bring the old fashioned Indian charm out of it, you know. So and it's fun. But yeah, really interesting dude. Great in the role. And then for our other
I did, you know, when I was a kid, I was like, I always thought his sacrifice was bad at, like, such a cool part. But now watching it as an adult, I'm like, why?
I knew you were going to have a problem.
What was the point of this?
And that's fair.
Have you not seen how this thing fights? So you think, I'll just stand here. Hey, cut myself first.
I think it's one of those. Now, this is something that I think I've mentioned before in Inuit tribes, that there's something about an honorable death being a violent death.
Uh-huh.
So the idea of like running away only to, like, he already said, like, we're all going to die.
Right.
So he knows and feels like they're all going to die.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of like, well, I'm going to die fighting.
You know, was he embarrassed from the birds scaring him when he found the first bodies? He's like, you guys didn't see that, did you? Yeah.
Normally I hunt and sneak up on those and grab them, but these jungle birds are different. but yeah, so interesting cast here. And then we go on to Richard Chavez. And he was, along with Jesse Ventura, the only other real vet, like, well, I shouldn't say real veteran, the only other deployed veteran. They were both in Vietnam. Jesse Ventura is he says Navy SEAL, which is accurate. It was kind of like the predecessor to the SEALs, but, and then Richard Chavez
Navy
was,
pups.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. Underwater demolition sounds cooler, right. But like, but Richard Chavez was in the Army. And then we have Bill Duke.
Yeah.
How about that guy?
Dude. Yeah, man. What a presence. Like, he just commands.
Is there any other Bill Duke in the fucking world?
Well, no.
No. I mean, the thing is, I was talking about this earlier.
He's my favorite guy in this movie.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
He's amazing. I was talking about it in the office, and it's like, it's a good thing that men like Bill Duke, it was a great thing that the action genre exploded the way that it did, because the guy couldn't get any roles. I mean, he's also 6'4".
Yeah.
And so it's like, what roles is this guy going to play? And so the action thing kind of opens up. But as we're watching these movies like Commando and we're kids, you believe that these guys are just real
fucking. He was in Commando, right?
Oh, yeah. He's the Green Beret that he fights in the hotel room.
Right.
Yeah.
And see, that's one I have not seen in a long time.
Oh.
But that I watched a ton. And I'm sure I would love it, but I don't think I would like it like I like Commando.
We watched it in L.A.
Oh, my God, we did.
We did.
I mean, kind of. It was barely, like in the background.
It was on, yeah. But yeah, you kind of believed that these guys were so, because of they were so intimidating, that you believed that these were just bad dudes. But Bill Duke is amazing. He secured an academic scholarship to Boston University, and he was going to quit because he was working a ton of other odd jobs just to pay for his books, his room, and his board. But he got a dean from the first community college that he had to go to before he could go to Boston University. And this guy was like, you're way too smart. Like, fuck that. Right. And he wrote him a check every year for the next 4 years to pay his room and board so that he could stay at that university.
Wow.
Now, he did make the switch from medicine over to dramatic arts and actually dancing. But he went on to study at least two other really prestigious schools. And had trouble finding work. And he actually got a lot of work as a director, and he directed a lot of episodes of Dallas. So the first day that he's going to Dallas to direct the show.
Is this before Predator?
Yes.
Okay.
So before Predator, yeah, he's directing Miami Vice episodes. He's directing Dallas. Just a really accomplished theater.
Yeah. Thing.
And so he's like, I hand washed my car. He's like, it was my first day as a director. I went out and I got the best looking suit that I could get. I got a tie. I had a briefcase, and I just really, wanted to show these people and really make a good impression. And I pulled up to the lot, and the security guy said, "Who are you delivering for?"
Oh.
And, he said that what he wanted to say was, "I'm about to deliver a can of whoop ass," is literally like out of his mouth. This is what he said. But he said that he had remembered a speech from Dr. King urging people to not respond to ignorance in an angry sort of way. So he said, "Sir, I have been hired by the producers of Dallas to deliver my talent." And then he went in.
Nice.
So good for him. God bless him. And to hear him tell the story, it's very, very touching, because you can tell how much hurt there was when he experienced that. But really a very, very smart guy, and gives a really, really touching performance in this movie, which you might be saying, like, what are we talking about? Touching performances in Predator?
Yeah.
But it is.
Yeah.
He loved Jesse the Body Ventura, for God's sake. He just, there was man love there.
Yeah. That hurt him. Just his moments. My favorite moment of his is right before his death, but when he like grabs Carl Weathers and he's like, he's like, doesn't move. Like, he never moves his body.
Yeah.
And just the way he like looks around with his eyes, and it's just like, "I see you." I fucking love that part so much. I love. Yeah. I'm so happy. Like, it's him that the Predator uses, 'cause they're like, "Over here."
Yeah.
"Over here." I fucking love it. Yeah, the anytime is so good.
By the way, I should announce, if you're going to watch this movie all the way to the credits, you are not going to see a legal writing or bit of a declaration saying that no animals were harmed in this movie.
Oh.
Because that scorpion is real.
Yeah.
And they smashed it.
Yeah.
So, sorry, one scorpion
it's
out of it.
It's a scorpion.
But let's talk about the animals in this shoot. So they're in Mexico. It's hot as fuck. And the funny thing is like, somebody said this and it sounds like a joke, but they were always on a hill. Like,
right.
Imagine 1 foot up, 1 foot down constantly.
Yeah, that's like a Survivor challenge.
Right. Like, just burning thighs. There's a thing that we do at the gym called Captain's Chair, where you have to put your back up against the wall, but like be in a seated position, and just hold it there.
Yeah.
And it burns like there's no tomorrow. So imagine doing 12-hour days in 100 degrees in the jungle like that. But along with that, we have bugs. Bugs everywhere, to the point where they had one tent that had the food. And they put all this shit around it to try and like keep the bugs away, and the tiki torches and all that stuff. So they go in on the first day for the first lunch break, and there's bugs all over everything, all over the food. And they say, well, guys, there's bugs all over this. Like, where's the other stuff? And they're like, there is no other stuff. So at that point, with all that testosterone in the room,
yeah,
it became first protein, guy is like,
let me show you how it's done.
Yes. Extra protein. So they just ate the fucking bugs.
Damn.
With their food. Somebody told me that today, that dipping Danishes in coffee comes from not just like the aesthetic taste of it, but that I don't remember what war it would have been, but the guys would have these biscuits and they would dip them in the hot coffee because it would draw out the grubs, like the boll weevils.
Oh, in the coffee. Just,
in the biscuit.
In the biscuit.
And then you'd
God.
Wipe out the boll weevils. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have even said it. Wow. I was disgusted when I was told the story.
Yeah.
But it's not nearly as disgusting as an old Taekwondo instructor of mine who liked to mash up Ritz crackers in the bottom of black coffee and then spoon out the like Ritz cracker mush.
Oh, interesting. That he sounds not that. Bad.
It might not be that bad.
I just tried milk toast.
Is that a real
thing? It is a real thing. And it's really all it is you lightly toast two pieces of bread, put them in a bowl, and pour like warmed spiced milk over it.
And then you
cover it for a couple minutes, and then you eat it. And it's like, you know, like if you've ever had like on Christmas, if your parents are ever like, oh, some warm milk will help you sleep. Like there's always that funky 70s milk, hot milk recipe. Like it kind of tastes like that.
You know, there's a Latino thing that is like, it's just like sugar rice milk.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, probably pretty similar. You just make some rice, you pour some milk into it, and then you pour some sugar on it.
Yeah.
And it's good.
Oh, yeah, because the milk is very sweet, too.
So that would, I would eat that.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I thought it was just a description for a boring person.
It all is spelled very differently.
Okay.
This is literally milk toast.
Somebody, I think probably the like description came first, and somebody's like, I am sick of this bullshit.
Well, it definitely looks milk toast.
Right, yes. But it doesn't taste it.
No, no.
But yet it does. So
real breakfast anomaly.
It is. Yeah, if you just want to, you know, ask yourself a lot of existential questions during your breakfast.
Right.
So we've got this super awesome cast of all these guys, and we start.
Well, we kind of gloss over Shane Black, and you had said something about him dying first, and I didn't know what the story was behind that.
The story is that Shane Black is a writer. He's a comedian and a writer. And John McTiernan, is that the director?
Yeah.
So he wanted Shane Black in the movie knowing that he was a writer because he always felt like he wanted the script punched up a little bit.
Okay.
So he's like, here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to cast a writer. I'll have him on the set.
Maybe on a break, be like, what do you think would be better here?
Exactly. Right.
All right.
So, but Shane Black, being the purist that he is, refused to do that. And he's like, well, all right, motherfucker, I'm going to kill you first.
Oh, wow.
And he did. Like but he's great in the moments that he has.
Yeah. And he would go on to direct a Predator movie.
Yeah. So that's kind of like, fuck you, dude.
Yeah. And Wright, which was kind of regarded as a decent one. It was kind of I don't want to say rebooty. Is that the one with Keegan-Michael Key is in it, I believe? I've lost track of the several Predator sequels, all of which are not really worth watching.
Yeah.
Two is okay. Two is the one, because this one is like the, you know, army guy, which is our most deadly, you know, hero or whatever. And
right.
Then the second one is our second most deadly hero, a U.S. police officer.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Well, it's definitely not the Navy. But yeah. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No, that's my dad's a Marine. It just comes with the territory. But anyhow, no, that's interesting.
I don't remember three. I think there was a three. I don't remember anything from that one.
You know, and I skip those movies, and it's something that I've always felt bad about, but maybe I'm doing the right thing.
No, yeah, you're not. The newest one, that Hulu movie, Prey, that one is awesome.
Yeah. Are there Indians in that?
if I'm thinking of the right one, yes, everyone, right. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I am going to have to see
that. None of them cut themselves.
Right.
To stall the alien for a minute.
Yeah.
Less than. Well, a minute. That would have helped, maybe.
Right, right. Yeah, it's like.
Like, doesn't lose stride as he kills Billy, as he just, like, breezes by him.
Yeah. That's a. Now, I'm going to get this out of the way, otherwise I'll forget it. when, after he kills Billy, and after Schwarzenegger goes like down a river, then over a waterfall,
yeah,
and then climbs out, the Predator has a body. Is that
Billy's body? Yeah, the head that he rips out with the spine.
So he carried Billy's carcass?
Yeah, he went back and got the carcass. Yeah, he did that earlier in the movie with Jesse the Body's body.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Do you know who came up with the our alien has a really interesting look?
Yes, he does.
Do you know who came up with those mandibles?
I mean, I think so. Not Rick Baker, but Stan Winston.
No.
Oh, the actual like
came
crab
up with
face?
The idea of a creature.
No,
of course he's all over everything. Oh. James Cameron.
Of course.
That dude, I tell you what, James Cameron is James Cameron.
Him. Yeah.
But it's like, I can't remember. This was driving me nuts earlier that I ran out of time, but to look it up. But there was one thing in the last couple of years that people, the government or scientists were having to theorize about something. Something that had to do with, it should be science people, right?
Yeah.
And they literally went to James Cameron and they're like, what do you think, dude? Like, you come up with all this stuff. I don't know if they were trying to research something at the bottom of the ocean, or they were contemplating something space-time or whatever, it was like some far out concept, and they literally called him and they're like, you're pretty good at this stuff. So, I mean, he's a smart dude.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a lot of cool ideas. And he came up with those with that face, which if you want to talk about, if anybody wants to have the argument between practical effects and CGI, is there a better argument than Predator?
No.
Holy fuck. That alien looks awesome.
Yeah.
And not rubbery at all.
No. The actual alien, no.
Yeah.
The CGI in this movie, if that even is, I don't know how they did the transparency effect.
I don't know.
All right.
I read about it, but then
I'm sure some. Look it up, people.
Yeah.
We don't have to do every bit of research for you.
Right.
Like, those parts do look kind of weird. The first part, like the first time where it does attack Shane Black and does this weird kind of like galump to him.
Yes. No, you're so right. Odd.
And I know, and a lot of the shots of it are kind of in slow-mo, like when it's jumping from tree to tree. And I'm sure that is to help make it look better, probably.
Sure.
Like, probably looked like when you stabilize that old Bigfoot footage.
Yeah.
If you stabilize it to where the Bigfoot, like the frame around it is moving, but the Bigfoot stays motionless, you're like, oh, that's a dude in a suit.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, without question.
Oh my God.
Right. How did we all get fooled for so fucking long?
Yeah.
They were just using the Star Trek trick.
Yeah.
You know?
And it is jarring how much that helps.
Right.
Just a little some frame effects or movement or something.
Speaking of minimal things to have great effect, the aliens or the Predator's blood was made with glow sticks and lube. That's what was used to make his blood.
Oh man, I really thought I read this fact, and I really thought you were going to milk that. Like,
well,
glow sticks
also,
with a little personal
can also be used for a sexy good time. Glow sticks.
Leave out the glow stick stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Glow sticks optional. Well, really lube.
Yeah,
optional.
Would that be bad? Probably.
Yeah,
it'd probably be bad.
Or annoying. Like if you just had like somebody doing like glow stick stuff. It's like, can you just stop doing that? I'm trying to fuck here. But it's cool though. Like, here's the thing. As you're watching it in the movie, you're like, oh, it can't just be that. Like, it is so luminescent.
Yeah.
You're like, that can't be a practical effect.
Yeah.
But I guess if you just, like our parents forbade us to do, cracked open one of those sticks,
someone
I bet it looks pretty
like,
cool.
What are you doing?
Right.
Although it does, I mean, I bet there's a little post touch up to it too. There seems, I don't know.
Well, the one thing that I didn't understand from a technological aspect was that I know that they struggled with the heat vision thing, which I love that heat vision.
Dude, iconic.
So fucking cool. And it's the sound with it too. It's not just the visual.
Yeah.
It's that. Yeah. Right. Yes. Not quite a current affair. Like,
right.
But I mean, yeah. And it's very, very cool. Now when they first tried it, it didn't work because everything was hot.
Right.
Like they're in the jungle. So it's like, well, what the fuck? So I can't remember. I think what it ultimately ended up being was post-production CGI or like whatever their version of CGI
was. I mean, it looks like normal. But what I mean, I really only know Thermal Vision from this movie, so I can't be like, they did it. They nailed it.
Maybe a Phil Collins video or two, but yeah, like that's basically
which
it.
Which Phil Collins video?
Oh, there's one that makes heavy use of
Thermal really? Vision. Oh, really? Yeah. Man, I don't remember that.
I mean, you're still looking at Phil Collins. But
right.
Yeah. But either way, Ebert liked this movie.
Yeah.
Siskel is a I feel bad now. I wrote down as a human vagina, but I don't even
how
want
did
to say
I not look
now.
Their up their review for this shit.
I don't want to say that Siskel is a human vagina, but that's what I wrote down, and I said that he doesn't like jungle movies about creatures with strange fangs. That's what he said about
wow.
this movie.
Wow. Yeah, he's like, I have a very specific list. I can't believe I never thought I'd run into it, and they nailed it.
Right. Yes. So.
God damn.
Yeah, and then Fright Night creeping up on its on its tail. So he didn't like that either. But yeah, so, you know, but generally liked by critics, I want to say, and certainly liked by the population. I mean, yeah. Nobody's like Predator sucks. No one.
No. No. I but mean, maybe, know. Maybe Dr. Brian, when he watches it for the first time, like, I can't believe I recommended this piece of shit.
I hope not. I hope he doesn't say that because no, I think he'll love it. Now, we talked a little bit about that slow burn. So we're having fun as we get through the wonderful, like, caricature displays of testosterone with the famous handshake in the office.
Oh, yeah.
Starting out with, although a very, like, effeminate, like, Dylan! Like, very, very excited for Schwarzenegger's character to see Carl Weathers. But then it quickly goes into the you son of a bitch and the handshake.
Yeah.
There are...
I'm taken aback at, like... Schwarzenegger, you expect, but Carl Weathers' arm, you're just like, oh, okay, god damn. I mean, I see how he gets beat, but
yeah, there's
way to hold your own,
there.
Bro.
And
must be that it just probably just comes naturally.
It right, and it and yeah, it's not. I mean, god, here's the thing. If people just want me to shatter their dreams out there. When it comes to men, because these guys were all, I want to say, in their 30s when this was made. They're not young guys. To look like that in your 30s, I don't care what your genetics are, that's testosterone.
Oh.
That is steroids.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Absolutely. Without question.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Without question.
I thought Arnold looked, like, in this movie, I think he looks the best. Let's talk about Arnold for a second. I think in this movie, it might be his... maybe not best performance. What would be his best performance? Man, that's an interesting question. This is up there for sure, because I feel like he's acting his ass off.
I think it's this.
It might be this. Yeah, because it's early enough. He still has something to prove. He obviously understands the gravitas behind it and what his name already holds and the expectations of it.
Yeah.
So I think his acting is superb in this. He looks the best. Like, I mean, I'm not going to say he's in the best shape in this movie, but his shape is the best. He's not getting too old yet, to where his body starts looking weird.
Yeah.
But he's not in just pure bodybuilder form.
Correct.
Like just that silhouette of him getting off the chopper at the beginning. I'm like, Wow.
Yeah.
That is damn.
He lost. So in competition, he would have been around like 260 or so. And he dropped like about 25, 30 pounds by the time he would have gotten to this.
Right. Yeah.
And you're exactly right. There's not a lot of loss of the muscle. I mean, maybe that overall silhouette might be a little bit more compact, but it's still but it looks better. I think it looks better than competition style. And so he's trim, but the muscles are just, that's all there is muscle.
Yeah.
And it looks great.
All right. So that's steroids.
But it is steroids also.
Bummer.
Yeah. It's, you know, hey, the steroids don't lift the weights.
Hey, you know, this movie has, you know, it was cool back then to do steroids and throw around some gay slurs. Like, it was fine. Right, no one batted an eye. We've come a long way.
No homoeroticism involved there at all.
No,
just a bunch of dudes getting together and sweating. But yeah, he looks fantastic in it. And you're right, he is excellent in it. There's a scene where because there's been sort of one of the things that I like about this movie is that they don't try to convolute the plot too much by like having them there, like the government knows about the alien or something. That would have been stupid. But I could see a lot of...
Yeah, it's kind of Hitchcockian where it's like there is another plot going on and then all of a sudden...
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Right. Yeah. It's like all we wanted to do was stop this invasion and a fucking alien showed up and it's ruining things. So, but I mean, he knows that he can't tell Schwarzenegger's character that because as Schwarzenegger establishes in the beginning of the movie, you know, they're rescue team, not assassins.
Right.
So he knows. And I think Dylan or Carl Weathers would have known that about him so that he has to kind of make up something like we're saving somebody.
Yeah.
You know,
and this was a fun bit that I'm catching as an adult, like as a kid, I'm not paying attention to the nuance. I would like watching this. I'm like, oh, all these guys fucking hate Carl Weathers. Like something I've never realized in the 100 times I've watched this movie before.
Right. Yeah. Who hates Carl Weathers?
Right. I'm just like, oh, like he's untrustworthy. And yeah, just the whole, we were here for something else. I mean, it does make more sense because goddamn, there are so many people in this camp. Like it's kind of funny where, you think they've like killed everyone, and then there's a part where Billy comes over he's like on the top part of a garage, and then there are like 50 other people scurrying out, and you're like, Jesus Christ, how many people are in this camp?
Right. Yeah, no, that's true. Like, and I mean, yes, could somebody, if somebody was in a shitty mood and they wanted to rip on Predator, which just sucks, but if they wanted to, yeah, it's like, okay, they make a 10-second decision and like to take out this entire encampment and they're able to do it.
Right.
But again, these are the best of the best. So, yeah. But yeah, it's a little, and you know, it would be a little, what I want to say, like dishonest to say that they don't take every opportunity to show off Arnold's muscles.
Oh my God.
Like if he has to do something, it would be doing something that required him to flex his bicep.
Yeah.
Or
because it's like, how do we start the siege on this camp? Have him lift a truck.
Exactly. But we love it.
It's so
we
good.
Love it. We got it. Of course we want it.
I mean, just I know I've talked about the iconography, but goddamn, like just so many shots of him shooting a gun and just the pose he's in.
Yeah.
And there are so many different ones, too. you know, you get kind of the crouched one that's kind of on the cover. There's that one. The wild where he's got like the monkey lips where he's just going like, yeah, just shooting wildly. Like, but yeah, every time he's just like flexing as hard as he can.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And but you're right. Though.
As far as I mean. If you want to know the equivalent of what it's like for a man, like the equivalent of when you watch like old Ed Sullivan and the Beatles were on and the women are losing their shit.
Oh, yes.
The equivalent of that is you're a young man and you see Arnold Schwarzenegger stab a guy and go stick around. You're just like, ah!
Yes.
So good.
And I guess a part of that was is that like the guy who made the knives made him so fucking huge. Like Arnold's like, I gotta say something.
They are swords.
Yeah. Like, first of all, if you were a kid in the 80s and you had a survival knife, they were big enough already. Yes. This is like it is a sword. It's a survival sword. But along with that, we've got that gun that M134 minigun, which shoots 2,000 to 6,000 rounds per minute.
Damn.
But the funny thing is it actually works off of an external electric power source.
Yeah.
So there is no trigger. So they kind of took some liberties there that to actually fight. Now, they had a real one.
Yeah.
But in order to fire it, there's no like, I'm going to pull the trigger now. It's I've got a cord running down my pants and then out the ground and then a crew guy with a car battery waiting to put two wires.
So you can't just hold a pack I thought that's what he was doing. No. I mean, I figured it worked something like that, but I just thought that was part of the pack that the body carried around.
Well, you would that would be cool. Yeah. That would be cool, but no. Yeah, it's
I mean, if that's what the movie was trying to get me to believe, nailed it.
Yeah, that yeah, I whatever however that gun is doing what it's doing, I'm on board.
Yeah.
But you know, there are some really great scenes. There's this a particular scene in that encampment where they've kind of killed everybody and except for the like, oh my God, estrogen. Like there's right. We finally get a woman in this movie, which is a really nice, and I don't mean that jokingly, like that's a nice, I'm glad that they included that. It's a breath of fresh air. And you know, I think that while she might not have a lot to do with the film, I think that I'm glad that her presence is there.
Yeah.
And could there have been more women in the movie? Sure. I think I'm at least glad that she's there. So, but anyhow, in that encampment, after they've killed everyone, there's a scene, and if you got to watch this really close, and I even rewound it because I'm like, am I just making this what I want it to be with an emotional response? But it's when Schwarzenegger is confronting Carl Weathers, saying like, you set us up.
Yeah.
Like there was no guy that we were rescuing here. You just wanted us to come in here and do your dirty work.
Yeah.
Because now Carl Weathers works for the CIA. So in that exchange, if you look at the way that Arnold Schwarzenegger is looking at him,
yeah,
it is such a true mix of like disappointment and anger and just like it looks right through him.
Yeah.
And it's powerful. And that's great acting. You can say Arnold Schwarzenegger all you want. You can make fun of this dude all you want. But I'll tell you what, if you make fun of that man, you're only looking, making yourself look stupid because we're talking about a really smart, talented dude.
Yeah.
And in that scene, he's great. Now, here's the thing. Carl Weathers, if you look at him, the camera's kind of going back and forth. When he's saying that, like, I did what I had to do, I did the job, but yet he kind of knows that he's being called out, he has tears in his eyes.
Yeah.
And I was like, did I just, is that just sweat or whatever? And I rewound it and I'm like, God, no, he's welling up with tears there. Like he knows that he's fucked over his buddy here.
Yeah.
And it really, really nice. It's just a small scene.
Yeah.
And probably throwaway to most people, but it really, really great stuff there. And the thing is, we believe that Arnold Schwarzenegger is this giant, strong man that we just want to hop into his arms and have him carry us through the rest of this jungle. Like, he has such a commanding but compassionate vibe about him. Like, he's doing what he's there to do.
Yeah.
He's got taking command, but he's not an asshole. You know? He's not a prick. He's not just, I mean, we can talk about the testosterone thing for fun, but like, he comes across as being like, I care about my men,
yeah.
You know, and he does a great job.
Yeah, there's something very, just even when he's just like giving out orders that don't seem aggressive, and I completely trust every decision he's making.
And he's looking at the psychology of the guys too. Like he's analyzing where it's like something's off.
Yeah.
Like something is a little weird here, but it's not like, you know, I mean, he might like have to repeat a guy's name a couple times to get him to, you know, snap out of it. But he's not like, you're a fucking idiot. Like, right. Or you're going to get us all killed or whatever. Like, it's all just measured. Like, I am just trying to keep everyone alive.
Yeah.
And I think he does a great job. Now, there is that section of the movie where a couple of people have died.
Uh-huh.
We get this shot up at a full moon and literally the music, the score, done by
Alan Silvestri.
Yes. Yeah. Nice recall. Without looking at notes, by the way. Very good.
Yeah. Well, he did Infinity War.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He does the Avengers theme and Back to the Future.
Oh.
He had just done Back to the Future.
You know, that Back to the Future stuff's pretty special.
Oh, my God.
That like, ooh.
Yeah.
Like,
which you starts- hear in this movie. Like, I can see he does have a lot of odd, just kind of like murmur background score. Because, yeah, you are right. I know I did tell you I'd watched this movie and I was like, what I loved about it was it's so how quiet it can be. And you were like, there's a score plays through the whole thing, which, yes, it does. But even that is in the moments where it's quiet, plays very low. Like there's never, you know, it's not just like balls to the wall, kinetic energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alan Silvestri rules.
And in that moment, it's like a clear like choice that this is a horror movie now.
Yeah.
And I don't think, and somebody might say like, oh, that's just a heady thing for a horror podcaster to say. Bullshit. We're in the fucking woods.
Yeah, something dude, is hunting people down. I don't know why this down. Movie is not referred to as horror more often. Is it just because it's an alien? Like, if you don't show the alien crash or whatever, or if I don't know it's an alien.
Yeah.
Why isn't this horror in a monster stalking guys in the woods?
It like,
how is it
is.
Any different than any other monster stalking people movie?
Bill Duke gets his goddamn brains blown out.
Right.
Graphically.
Yeah, he has a laser gun. I guess that's it.
Right.
But who fucking cares?
Yeah. Freddy Krueger is in pizza. Like, I mean, you know, like, are we really going to talk about things being outside of reality?
Right.
Like, it's absolutely a horror movie, and it's a siege movie, but I think that it starts to feel, and maybe as kids we didn't, like, flip that switch from, I mean, we're just going to see it as action all the way through.
Right.
But, like, I think that there's a feeling that it's more than your average action movie. I think that there's a feeling of like, hey, aren't these guys supposed to be winning? Like,
right.
And they're getting just picked off left and right and savagely.
Yeah.
So fuck yeah, it's a horror movie.
Yeah.
Without question.
There's so much intensity in the movie. I think when I said how patient it is, like even just the part like from when Shane Black is first killed, right? And then they're like, oh, the jungle came alive, and they start kind of spreading out and checking it out. I mean, just like that whole sequence is so long and not a lot happens, but it's so intense, but not like you're like gripping yourselves, because those you can't sustain that for that long, you know. It's not like a high intensity, but it's just this like low heat simmer, you're just locked in,
yeah,
until you know the next guy gets it, and then there's another, you know, after after Shane Black gets it, then Jesse the Body gets it. And then even after that, like, that's one of my favorite, you know, they bring it back down. They're whispering to each other.
Yeah.
Like, what to do? Like, all that shit. It's so fucking the waiting at night before the boar attack. Like, there's so much not going on in this action movie that just has me absolutely locked in.
100%. And Bill Duke, like, could have said his lines in a million different ways, but that, like, I'm going to cut your name into them. Yeah. Like, it's so chilling and like sad at the same time. Yeah. Like, and that music, like, okay, I maybe you haven't served your country. Maybe you're not the most patriotic person, but if you don't hear this Silvestri slight variation on Taps that they have, because there's a theme to this movie, but then there's this theme. It's the Taps theme. And if you don't feel a little fucking something, like, here's the thing. When this podcast ends, not this episode, but whenever we somehow
next
years
week,
from now bring
when
it
we're
to,
done.
Yeah, years from now, bring it to an end. Like, make no mistake, it will not be. It will be the last song. I think it would make a nice last song at the very end, but it will not be the last part of the music of that episode, because what that episode will end with is "It's the Night Again."
Damn but it. I was going to cut that in there. Oh, you did it anyway. I just looked to see what time. I'm like, whatever he says, I'm cutting in. It's the Night Again. Yeah.
But we're going to do, I've already planned it out. We're going to do that. And then we're going to like cut in like different like vocal bits, like funny bits. And like, then the music will come up again and then we'll go into the vocal bits. That's all for years from now.
Oh, cool.
But
I guess I'll start planning and pulling stuff. Thanks for, because you'll be doing that. Yeah, you'll be doing that.
Right. Right.
But, just let me know what else you want for the last episode.
Yes, exactly. Yes. To use the urinal, actually. Oh, my God. Am I not pissed?
Don't jinx it. I didn't want to say it.
All right. Okay. How far are we?
We're good.
Okay,
good.
Yeah,
I think we can make it. Good. We can make it then. We can make it.
But yeah, really, really strong performances. And then we really get, make no mistake here, we get a kind of extra movie here at the end. I looked at where I was time-wise in the movie when Schwarzenegger is realizing that he has to, that it's all on him.
Yeah.
And he has told the woman that they were kind of hostage, rescue, however you want to put it. He's basically told her, like, save yourself, go to the chopper,
yeah.
You know. So she's gone. And it's just him. And we've got a good, like, I'm not exaggerating. Yeah, I know you're not going to believe this. It's between 25 and 30 minutes left of the movie.
It's like the third act.
Yeah. And we get like a whole nother fucking movie here of what is, you want to talk about just delicious foreplay of 80s action movies. Preparation montage.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Oh, whether it's buying the guns and going through the store and picking out the guns and the weapons, or it's building the traps or setting them or whatever it may be. Oh. I don't know
in
what
the
is
torchlight, so- like him fucking bending those branches.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Not to mention, here's the thing. This sounds so silly. But if they're like, okay, you know, we've got this big budget horror movie and Arnold, you're a big star and you're got all these muscles and everything. But if you're put on the spot to say, we need you in darkness to hold this torch and give like a primal feral yell to summon this beast to what might be and probably is your certain death.
Yeah.
And he nails the fuck out of it. I'd like to think that there was no like sound alteration there. I think it's just him because I listened real close.
Yeah, it's got to be. Yeah.
It is awesome. We directed a show together. Now, albeit it was a girl of probably barely over 5 foot tall teenager, but we struggled to get her to roar. Now she ended she got there.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, we're sitting here like anybody listening in their car right now is probably trying out some roars, you know, rolling up the window so they can try it out themselves. Go for it. But I mean, that sounds like a simple thing, but like it could be one thing where everybody's standing around on the set and whatever comes out of your mouth is just awful.
Right.
Like, just fucking horrible and high pitched and your voice cracks and it's like, oh fuck, can I do that again? And they're like, well, you're going to have to. Right. But he, whatever comes out of his mouth sounds like exactly what you would want to hear.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. And he kind of whoops
that. I mean,
that
we've all done it at some point, done some sort of fucking pose.
You know, I am lucky enough. I've had the opportunity to do one on stage.
Oh, in what show?
Well, a little bit of a variation, but Pillow Man.
Oh.
When I was killing Michael.
Oh, I've never seen that part.
And then, oh, really?
Well, yeah, I'm not on stage.
Oh, yeah. So I was killing my brother because I knew that he was ultimately a murderer. And even though he was kind of
simple,
that I knew that he, you know, this is what had to happen. So I'm killing him. And then as I'm killing him, I just let out this scream of everything, like a pain of torment, of anger. And
it's a mercy kill because he's going to be tortured.
Right, right. Yeah. But it's exhilarating.
Yeah.
It's almost as if they should have done a whole like therapy bit about that in the 60s. You ever read about that?
Oh, yeah.
The primal
screaming.
Primal screaming.
Yes. Yeah.
But no, he does a great job. And he kicks that motherfucking alien's ass. Like, I mean, it's a little bit of back and forth.
Well, yeah.
But he was ready now.
Yeah, I mean, kicks his asses. He gets a good lucky shot in.
He's
got a great plan.
He was
though.
Prepared.
Yeah, he was definitely prepared.
And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, God damn it. I am way behind on my knowing how to build any of this. Like, he's got this whole, like, he's like delicately like weaving knots together and shit. And I'm like, I wouldn't know where to start. Right.
I could maybe set up a log I could push on him.
Right. I'll get the fire going.
Yeah.
If I have a lighter.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, he really sets it up for this alien. But you know what? I guess this is something that you wouldn't think about out loud, but as all of that sounds so implausible, as the action plays out, like it feels okay.
Yes.
Like it feels like, you know, a little tit for tat, and it's not just like I'm killing the fuck out of this alien and embarrassing him.
Right.
Some things are working, some things aren't.
Yeah. And there's a good, like, we're eliminating the technology that the Predator has, so it becomes more of an equal footing.
Yeah.
But he still has the upper hand, but Arnold's planned.
And we get some nice cinematography along the way.
Oh, my God.
Some fucking awesome close-ups. And I always make myself sound so stupid when I say this, but those European zooms that I love. I love to call European zooms. Yeah. All they are is just like long-distance fast zooms.
Yeah.
But they're really effective in this movie because, again, we're in the jungle, especially early on. And what the zoom does is it creates its own level of tension and anxiety because it's like, I know I'm supposed to be seeing something out there. The camera is telling me that I'm supposed to be seeing something. Yeah. But, you know, it's really hard to nail down. But yeah, those
Billy's close-ups. Sensing something is out there.
Right. Yes. Billy's whole life is a zoom. It's just a dramatic zoom right. into the distance.
Now, the zooms are cool. The only thing that kind of, I mean, I wouldn't say it bothers me in this movie, but it does kind of stick out. And I think it works really well sometimes, not so well as others, is McTiernan does this weird kind of like, he's not zooming or anything, but it's just kind of like he just kind of like pans around a character very quickly as they're turning to.
Yeah.
So sometimes it just looks a little overdramatic. The best time it works, this so, and it's almost disorienting, is when Jesse the Body dies, and because he gets shot with the pulse beam.
Yes.
And the first time it's just kind of a spark and he looks a little dazed. And so he's turning around as the camera's following. And then over the shoulder, you get the bolt that comes down. Oh, that is fucking gorgeous.
It's great. You're right. Excellent point, because when he gets that first blast, you're like, okay, something's wrong.
Right.
The look on his face, just like you said. But yeah, really well done. Yeah, he uses that a little bit.
Yeah.
But there's also some nice just perspective, some background stuff. Probably the best example is right in the time frame that we're talking about in the end, that third act there, where Arnold is tracking the alien by following his blood trail. And he follows him into this sort of like tunnel or little like ditch into the ground. And he's like kind of the trail sort of runs out. And then we see over like a real nice tight close up on Arnold's face, half of it. And then over his shoulder, we see the alien dripping blood in the background.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, God, he lured him into there. Like, he is fucked. And there's several scenes.
He's a very good hunter.
Yeah. There's several scenes in this movie where it's not just like somebody having to be so awesome all the time. And there was a moment in this movie, and I thought about you, and I'm like, you know what? I don't dislike the guy. I actually really like him. The Rock will never fucking touch Arnold.
Oh,
ever.
Come on.
Never fucking ever.
No.
And it's just not that same vibe, not that same level.
Yeah.
And that's just the thing. Like there was even in moments where there's a moment where Arnold, when he doesn't even realize that being covered with the mud kind of camouflages him from the visibility of the alien.
Yeah.
And he's just like hides. Like he's like, I got nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Like I'm not saying he's offering himself up Billy style, but there's just nothing else to do.
Right. But he still looks like he's like at least bracing himself. Like he's like, maybe I can get a kick in right. or something.
Yes. Yeah. I've got my back up against something that I know what it's a yeah. tree. I know what it is.
It's such a clever. I mean, in retrospect, this has been, you know, spoofed and parodied so many times. But man, as a kid, like that just felt so. What a clever device of, oh, he's covered in mud. He can't, he's limited by the heat vision. Like he can't see regularly.
Great point. This movie, much like when we talk about technology in movies, makes you feel like you're a seasoned veteran of three or four wars. Like there's a scene where it's so funny. Like we all like go in for it because we want to believe that we would be that same way. And the movie does a good job of making you focus on these things. Perfect example is Jesse Ventura is like they're getting ready to set up, you know, or infiltrate something, and he's reaching forward, and then whoo, we get a close-up of a tripwire.
Yeah.
And we're like, we're all thinking like, oh, watch out for those tripwires. Like, oh, they'll fucking get you. Like, we fucking know.
Right.
Like, we've been there. Like, we're underwater demolition people.
Yeah, I would have tripped it, but he's good. He
right.
Or knew.
Like, or like, no, I would have seen it too. Like, good on you. Yeah, we're together on this. Yeah, I'm glad you saw that, buddy. like, but it makes you kind of feel like, it makes you feel like, yes, I too would like figure out the mud thing, you know?
Right.
But yeah, it's great. And that mud thing, like, talk about a producer's nightmare. Like, you're going to take my muscle bound star and cover him in mud and take out all definition.
But he looks so much cooler, though.
Oh, fuck, does he look awesome.
Yeah.
Like, he looks like.
Yeah, that guy complained until he's like, Arnold walked out and he was like, oh.
He's like, look at that fucking mud demon. Right. Like, holy fuck, he looks awesome.
Make me dirty, daddy.
Right. Somebody grab the glow sticks in the lube. There it is.
Yes. But,
so, yeah, we get this badass third act. And you know what? At the ending, we don't need a lot of bombast. Like, he wins.
Yeah.
He is standing there tired, naturally.
Yeah.
The helicopter sees this giant explosion. One thing to ask about.
Yeah.
The laugh. So this alien records, it tries to, like, use the sounds and the language that it hears from what it's hunting so that it can manipulate it or whatever.
Yeah.
So at the end, when it sets off its self-destruct mode, it starts using Sonny's laughter. Billy's laughter.
Yeah.
Sonny Landham. But yeah, Billy's laughter. And I'm first name. Yeah. I can use that word. He sets off that self-destruct thing, starts using Sonny's laughter. I think it's fucking cool.
I love it.
I mean, they push it. They get a little higher pitched with it as
well,
it goes.
Well, yeah, you know.
But it's fun.
It's a recording. It's digital.
Right. But it's creepy. And again, like, this is what I'm saying. You see this alien technology counting down, but in not any sort of
You don't know
fashion,
what it means.
But then you see one of the squares disappear, and you're like, oh, yes, it is a countdown. Right. Yeah. I, too, would get that. Or not just stand there and get blown up with him, which is what I
but
would
do.
But
it does seem kind of a cowardly way out, right? It is an odd characteristic. I mean, I guess maybe the lore of the Predator has not been as established in this movie because, yeah, eventually through the series of movies, we learn this is a race from a planet of, this is the culture of the planet, is they just go to other planets and hunt things. Like, that is all they do.
Maybe that is the mentality of a coward that does hunt for trophies.
Great point.
Fuck those guys.
Wow. Yeah. So, like, say, yeah, some rich guy goes to Africa to hunt a lion.
Right.
It gets kind of loose and is pouncing on him.
Right. And he's like,
I've got a gun in my hand.
I had no problem killing you.
Right.
I have a problem with you killing me, though.
Right. So I'll just end it before I have to suffer through you ripping my throat out.
Or make our city's best pizza.
What?
He hunted all those.
Oh, yeah. Tony's. Oh, yeah.
Sorry. No, I.
Yeah, we have a local pizza joint who loves taxidermy.
Yeah. Yes, he does. And he, yeah, but he hunted all those.
That's good for him.
Which I don't know. Maybe he ate it. I don't know. But either way.
Either way, it was literally 45 years ago,
yeah,
at least. Because, goddamn, those things have been in there forever.
Yeah. But no, it's a great ending. It's a simple ending. We don't try to get
that whole. What a twist that puts on their whole culture for me.
Yeah,
it's a great
douchebags.
Yeah,
cultural appropriation.
Yeah, I've
with
got.
Hairstyle.
I can. I mean, I will say this: have I had moments where I've gone, are you that good of a hunter because you just use super superior cloaking technology and a laser gun?
Fair point. That's incredibly.
Like, that's where I'm always like, you use like a bow and arrow. I'm fine with you hunting.
Yeah.
Put the gun away, you puss bag.
No, that's, I like bow hunting.
Yeah.
And you know, that's very astute because that's what our alien does. I think he goes through that at the end where he's like, finally, like, a formidable foe.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, yeah, because he kind of strips the stuff, doesn't he?
It's a little bit of backwards logic where it's like, now that I have somebody that could take me, now I'll fight fair.
Yeah.
a little backwards, but.
Well, they might be, you know, a little vain
of a
species.
But I think he was like, okay, like, finally, like, Jesus, I travel all this way and, you know, finally I'm not just wasting my time here.
Right.
But so, yeah, that part's cool. And yeah, and then we get an ending.
Yeah, the laugh's great. I love the laugh. And
then we get, you know, the
I don't know if I love the what causes the laugh, the pussy jokes. I feel very tired.
Yeah.
And very, I guess, late 80s. I mean, yeah, those jokes probably killed in the late 80s.
But you know what, though? Shane Black's delivery of the, not just the joke, but like of the moment and them not landing is hilarious.
Yeah, it is hilarious.
Yeah. So, I mean,
yeah, that's how I would react like Billy does to those jokes. Right. Just like, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But no,
I don't know what he finds so funny about the second one that he does not get about the first one.
Like, yeah, right. Yeah.
They're very, yeah, not much difference in the tenure of the joke, the tenure of the jokes. You know what I'm talking
what
about.
Mean. Yeah. But, but either way, we don't get anything silly. We have this, you know, this female, hostage or rescue, however you want to call it. And, you know, but we don't get some like silly love affair there. She's in the chopper, you know, she looks nice, you know, like she gives a smile. Like, I mean, maybe they have some shared trauma and they go on to like have, they'll be the only two that can.
She's immediately arrested when they get back.
Well, yeah, there's
that. Never sees her again. She's thrown in a cell.
He's never. Meanwhile, Schwarzenegger's character is like, there's not a whole lot of other women that I can talk about the alien that I killed in the Mexican jungle. So can I have this, please? But yeah, so, but no, it doesn't overstay its welcome. Not a short movie.
No.
I mean, it's just creeping up on 2 hours.
Yeah.
But fine. I mean, watchable, fun all the way. I think they're changing the dynamic. They're changing the focus. They're changing the tension. There's always tension, but it's different tension.
Yeah.
So they're either like infiltrating this camp or they're realizing that there might be something out there. Or then they do realize that something's out there, but they don't know what it is.
Yeah.
So it's always like these stair steps towards like eventual realization of we're fucked. Like, this is bad.
Yeah.
Like, forget like going to the chopper. Like, we're not even going to get there.
Right.
So I think it's just a really well thought out. I mean, I hate to use the term elevated. But I mean, maybe
it felt elevated.
It's an elevated action movie, 80s action movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't think of another
by
one.
A guy who would then go on to make some of the most iconic action movies of the next decade.
Right.
And heard of Die Hard.
Now, don't get me wrong. Like, First Blood, the first Blood is a great movie. I mean, it is just a down and dirty, gritty, great movie, and with it's not a silly action movie. It's just really well done. But this is incorporating so many other larger. I mean, it's a much bigger film than First Blood.
Yeah.
So, but they're just able to somehow keep their arms around it all the time.
Yeah.
To where it doesn't get silly.
There is one more key thing we haven't brought up.
Oh yeah.
That needs to be talked about. Do you know what it is?
No.
The end credits.
Oh, yes. Yes.
For some reason. And now it's not unlike a movie to, during the end credits, show your leads maybe like a clip from the movie you just watched and, you know, have their name or whatever. I don't know if that's always, I mean, I would assume doing it for everyone, that's a decision made by the director or whomever. Yeah. Yeah, this, so we have a nice little name montage of all our main actors, yet they, for a very serious, violent, bloody, scary movie, the end credits as we introduce our actors feel like the opening of an 80s sitcom.
Absolutely.
They're just kind of these funny, like, the camera caught me, a little smile and a wig, you know. Tip a cup of coffee to you. It is the weirdest fucking thing.
It is
which
bizarre.
It does for everyone. I'm sure Arnold Schwarzenegger was like, I'm not doing that. And there's just a shot of him in, like, they literally have to freeze frame it. Like,
yeah, right.
It's just a still from the movie.
No, you thought exactly the same thing I did where he's like, no. But yeah, everybody else, like, even the girl, like, does like her heads forward and she like lifts her head up and like throws her hair back.
Yeah.
Like, it's so,
and it's just like right into the camera. Like, it's not like here's maybe like an outtake clip or something. No, they're like addressing the audience with their eyes.
And I don't even know.
And smiling, laughing. Like, remember me? I had my arm blown off.
Right. Yes. Right. And he even lifts the gun like, it's okay, everybody. Right. I still have my arm, right. You know. We were just goofing around in the jungle. Jungle goofing. And the thing is, like, yeah, it's really silly, but in some ways it's kind of nice.
Yeah.
And somebody set it to the theme song for Full House.
Yes.
And it is fan-fucking-tastic.
I mean, I bet you could take any.
Pretty much.
Because that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
You could take any theme, sitcom theme song.
Yeah.
The fucking Family Matters. Who's the Boss?
Yeah. The do you remember how Who's the Boss goes?
Is that... No, that's Family Ties.
It's...
Oh, yeah.
There times I lost a dream or two.
Found a trail, and at the end was you. Yeah, there's a time for then and a time for little. Something. I said Family Ties. Interesting thing I found out. So there's a man and a woman singing that song, the Family Ties song.
Yeah.
A brand new life, brand new life.
Well, no, that was...
the end. Oh, my God. See, I'm getting
all run together.
Up.
Family Ties is...
found a... No, that's... Fuck, I keep going. God damn it.
Think of Alex pushing away like...
Yeah, and he goes,
it is,
woo!
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
I know that, but is that the
was
one.
That was when he was on speed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's
yes.
Right.
That... oh, my fucking God, dude.
Anyway.
Can you look it up?
Yeah, when we're done, I will. But the woman who's singing, wrote and is singing that song... is Frau Farbissina from Austin Powers.
Scott!
Really? Yeah,
really?
That lady? Yes.
No,
yes.
I would have never guessed that.
I know.
That
it's so crazy.
Years.
It's such a good... God, I wish I could remember that thing. I started doing it, and now I can't because I know the Who's the Boss theme.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And then there was the Growing Pains theme. That was written by Steven Dorff's dad.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's sung by Alan Thicke.
Yes.
And we know all of these, but we could sit here for another hour just trying to think in dead silence until one of us thinks
of it. It's like once I start hearing it, I could go.
Will you just,
but I don't remember.
Will you tune all that up at the end of the episode here?
Maybe. If I remember to do that. I've got a few days to do that. I'll try and remember.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. God forbid they do like A-Team or something like cool like that.
What do we do, baby?
Oh, yeah. That's it.
Without us. What do we do, baby, without us? Because there ain't no nothing that we can get. Love each other through. Ooh. All right, there. There it was.
Sha-na-na-na. Is that the Steve Cannell where he like rips the like paper out of the typewriter? And then
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Or the sit, you boo, sit.
Sit
good dog.
Good dog.
Yeah. Predator.
Anyway.
No, but yeah, awesome credit sequence there. I recommend Predator.
Yeah, I recommend Predator a lot.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah. My kid watched it with me. She did not pay attention. And so I had to be like at the handshake. I was like, hey, you know that? And she's like, oh, yeah. And then went back to whatever she was doing.
Right. No, I don't blame you.
But you'll be shocked at how much, if you've never seen this movie, how much you know from this movie.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't know it's from this movie.
Yeah, no. And I think that it holds up just the way that we were talking about earlier. And now you had said that you didn't think the transfer was real great from when you saw it.
Yeah.
I thought it was crispy as fuck. So it looked great.
But I really only noticed it in a part where it was bad. So that might have just been that moment.
Could have been. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't like the whole movie like, what the fuck is this?
The jungle
looks fine. Yeah.
It oftentimes beautiful in this movie. Like, yeah. I mean, you get a little bright sky in the background. There's ways that the natural light is going through the trees and highlighting some of the whatever foliage or whatever. It's a fucking badass setting. It's great. Yes. See Predator if you haven't.
Yeah.
And you know, here's the I know this sounds crazy with all those sequels that you mentioned. I would be willing to bet that there's probably more people that haven't seen Predator than you would think. Not maybe not guys like our age.
Right.
But, I mean, you go about 10 years younger, I don't know.
I believe it.
So watch Predator.
Well, yeah, because 10 years later, you're like, have you seen Predator? And they're like, the End of Days guy? No.
Right, yes. Do you remember him? Do you remember Schwarzenegger, like, chopping the board on the beach in the beginning of Twins? Like, rah! Like,
no.
Yes. Like, it's like a montage of, like, how great he's grown up to be.
Right, yeah.
Like, when the movie's getting started.
I remember him, like, taking notes.
Oh, okay.
That's the part I remember.
Yes.
Yeah. Weird we both remembered those very right, distinctly yeah. different parts.
Exactly. Right.
Like he gets the news and he's like, I have a brother. Like he's like doing homework.
Yeah. No, he's also screaming shirtless on the beach and karate chopping wood. Yeah.
That's a movie I have not seen in a while. That's,
oh, God. I haven't. I saw it. I don't know if I saw it outside of the theater.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You seem to have missed a lot. Yeah, folks. Tim was like, Kindergarten Cop. Is that good? Yes.
Oh, is that
very good?
That's the tumor one?
Yes.
Did I see
that? Oh, my
that?
God, dude. The chemistry he has with those kids.
What?
Is it not sexual chemistry? Oh, no, I'm not, Tim.
I wasn't even going there.
Only one of them.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. No, he's, God damn, it is another one where you're just like, oh, finally, something this guy can't do. And then you're like, fuck, he nailed it.
What year is that?
90.
How old is that? 15?
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, yeah, I'll check it out.
Yeah, you should check it out.
I haven't seen Jingle All the Way. I haven't seen any of that stuff.
Yeah. I saw Jingle All the Way. I mean, yeah,
I just know the box with him doing like the spread eagle, like hands up, and he's like wrapped up in like lights and stuff.
No, that's National Lampoon Christmas Vacation.
Oh, yeah. I have seen that.
Jingle All the Way is he's like going, he's got like his hands on his head, like he can't believe the predicament he's in this Christmas.
Right. Is he covered in mud?
No. He's covered in the side eye of Sinbad. Sinbad's in that movie too. Yeah, I mean, real quick, we were talking about just his odd meteoric run. I mean, from Terminator to this movie in 3 years, and he's already the fucking, he's done two movies. Well, he did the Conan movies.
Yeah.
He did the movies he was dubbed in. Then he did two Conan movies. I've only maybe seen one of them. And then you've got Terminator Commando, this, yeah. Running Man.
Yeah.
Just a decade of nonstop hits until Junior, which is in the mid-90s.
Yeah, because think about this. You get excited about that run that you just said, Terminator, or, you know, Conan, Terminator, Commando, Predator, Running Man, and we're not even to motherfucking T2 yet.
Right.
Like, wow. Like, what an awesome run that guy had.
Yeah. Yeah, T2 is pretty close to the, like, almost like a nice farewell movie.
Yeah, he got
for
himself
him.
Back in real, he was in real nice shape for T2. I mean, the guy wasn't like, you know, it's not like he was 25 when T2 came out.
True Lies comes out after that, I believe.
True Lies was pretty good.
Fucking, I love True Lies. James Cameron, goddammit.
Eliza Dushku, baby.
Yeah. Oscar award winner Jamie Lee Curtis looking so good. Some of my favorite French is in that movie where it's not even in frame where the guy's recording the seduction scene, and he's like, duet, very slowly, duet, doucement. And then he's like, who wants this shit, Harry? I love that movie. Bill Paxton in that movie. Charlton Heston in that movie is so good.
Do I need to re-see?
Yeah, Tom Arnold. Eyes? Rules.
I do remember
movie.
Him being
oh
pretty
my
awesome
god, poor Tom Arnold. What promise he had, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just so he's perfect for that movie.
Yeah.
Just that was the perfect time in his career to do that movie.
Right. Mm. All the cocaine that you could ever do.
Yeah.
And it suited him.
Yeah. I mean, that is one of the movies I've heard, you know, a few One podcast I listened to, a guy, when he talks about Schwarzenegger, is just like, every movie that that Arnold Schwarzenegger is in, the plot should just be he walks into a room and people go, Jesus Christ, what is with that guy? He's enormous.
Right, that's
like,
true.
He just can't play a normal, you can't. You just can't be a person who exists in society.
Right, right. Yeah,
that's like True Lies, where you're like, oh, you're just like a businessman?
Like, you would have to have, like, some biography of somebody like I don't know, this Oppenheimer movie was coming out. Was he just muscle-bound and 6'4 and, like, 260 pounds of muscle?
No.
Like, that's what we need. We right. need a, like, really smart, sensitive German/Austrian who is just a monster.
Did you look that up after I mentioned it last week?
No. Oh. No. But oh. I did have a couple people write to me about Bombs.
Okay.
We forgot about The Heat.
We did forget about The Heat.
The
yeah.
heat is a thing.
Well, yeah, but that's not really what's causing the... That causes the, like, fires left over.
But, like, the evaporation, like, the like, separation of, like,
yeah,
molecules.
Well, and heat is caused by the air moving that quickly as well.
Yes.
They're just bad. They're bad news.
Yeah, bombs. Bombs yeah. are bad.
Fucking bombs. But, yeah, look, well, yeah, I'm excited. Oppenheimer, I hope you come participate with us. Oh. I don't know. It's going to be a very odd day in film, but I am doing a double feature that day because the day Oppenheimer comes out also is the debut of Greta Gerwig's Barbie movie, which looks kind of interesting.
Okay.
And what an odd dichotomy of two movies to be released on the same day. It can only be intentional, so I'm going to see them both as intended on opening day.
Yeah, I like that. No, I think that that's a nice palate cleanser
yeah.
to Oppenheimer.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oppenheimer
yeah,
first.
See Oppenheimer first.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yes. All right. That's it.
I'll come.
Nice.
I'll,
sweet.
I'll show up.
Ooh, maybe they'll be doing it at Music Box.
Ooh, wouldn't
Ooh,
that be fun?
That would yeah. be fun. Okay. That was Predator from 1987. Happy birthday, Dr. Brian. We hope you watch this movie. That'd be great. Hopefully by this time you've watched the movie. But if not, you really missed out. And sorry, we ruined everything for you. Okay, starting next week, it's a short little new mini-series we've got called Take My Life, Please. And it's we're going back to the comedy well. And we are starting with a recommendation from superfan W. Frickenstein. Nailed it! Have been practicing that all day.
And you got Rare Gem, by the way.
I did get Rare
Nailed
Gem.
Nailed the
yeah.
fuck out of that.
I was doing some articulating exercises earlier as well.
It worked. I
yeah,
can tell.
Thank you. And yeah, so join us next week. Start of our miniseries, Take My Life, Please, from 2022. A little comedy movie I'd never heard of, but I watched a trailer for, and it looks very interesting, and I love the vibe of it.
Okay.
It's called Deadstream, about a guy who's live streaming.
Oh.
A haunted house.
Okay.
But better than Halloween 5.
It's not a
or
very
six?
High bar.
I don't yeah. remember which was the live stream one.
One of
Seven.
Those. Yeah. Yeah. It's.
Resurrection? I don't remember.
We'll never cover it.
Yeah. No, we'll never cover it.
But
doesn't
we will
matter.
Do this one.
We will do this one. So, yeah, join us next week for Deadstream. Check out our website, slumberpodcastmassacre.com. Shoot us an email, slumberpodcast@gmail.com. Huge thanks to our patrons. You help make this show possible. We love you so much. Thank you so much. Tim, is there anything else you have to say about Predator?
You know, not about Predator specifically, but just, you know, I'm very thankful for Dr. Brian. I know that he's a huge fan of the show. Sometimes I feel badly that... You know, we make mention of some people, of some super fans along the way, and then they might not, you know, hear their names along the way. But we never forget about anybody.
Yeah.
And there have been several super fans throughout these entire 3+ years. And we appreciate every one of you and the super fans out there that we don't know about.
Yeah.
Maybe you like to lurk in the shadows, and that's super cool, too.
Yeah, if you're a super fan and you feel maybe left out of this, listen, like... Dr. Brian, while we call him a super fan, he didn't even fucking start listening until like two years into this thing.
He
so.
Caught up quick, though.
He did catch up quickly. Yeah. He was like, oh, wow, you guys might have something here. And we were like, do you not know who we are? We're fucking professionals.
Yes.
but yeah. I'm glad, and he's been so supportive and very helpful. He helped get us our Justin Long interview. So
yes.
He's been an invaluable asset to the podcast, and I'll never stop making fun of him.
And if you look, we're going to believe you. If you write in for the first time, we've never heard of you from Adam, and you say, I'm a super fan. I've been listening since wherever, or I started listening last year and I've listened to every single episode. We'll throw your name out there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. Chime in. We love you.
Oh, chime in. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. All right, Tim.
If
it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yeah. Hunting.